Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, yo, yo. What's going on, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk. Oh, man, we got a good show for you tonight. We got a couple things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about we're going to review this weekend's Fight Night game versus Steve Hart and Fierro versus Nama Hunes. We're going to review that. We're going to talk UFC 293, which comes up this weekend. And me and Key's going to talk a little bit about gambling, man. I'm not too abreast of gambling, so, you know, I wanted Key's to give me, like, you know, breaking down how you go about gambling on MMA, you know, fights. But, you know, before we jump into that, like always, I got to introduce my co-host, my man out in Boston, Mass. What's up, Keys? What's good with you?
What's up, bro? I'm good. I'm good. And we will. We'll go over it. I'll break it down. There's a lot of times that I don't realize. I mean, it's like with anything. You don't realize when, like, if you're speaking all the time, you know a good share about, you know, a good, like, you start talking about it to other people, you may not realize that they might not be at, you know, I mean, they might not have the understanding that you have. And so when, I mean, that's what makes good teachers. But, you know, because a good teacher is like, is going to give you something and break it down in a way that it's, you know, most understandable for you, you know, and kind of the teachers can go back down to, I mean, that beginning stage and take it from the, you know, from the very basics. But yeah, we'll definitely get into that. We'll explain it. We'll break down the bets that I've been doing. I like to refer to it as sports betting because the way I'm doing it is, you know, I'm going about it very calculated, you know, fairly, you know, pretty conservative, pretty calculated. You know, I pretty much study it all week. So, you know, I don't like to think of it as a gamble. I mean, it is gambling, but I don't really like to think of it that way. But either way, yeah, we'll break it down. Let's get it, bro.
All right, well, let's jump into this weekend's fight night. Where you was talking before we came on air, Cyril Gane totally dominated Sergey Spivak. He actually made Spivak look pedestrian. And then when I'm watching Gane, I'm like, what was this at against John Jones? So, you know, Gane definitely like the guy that you fell in love with a while back. We fell in love with a while back. So break it down, man. What did you see from Gane? And, all right, were you more pleased with Gane's performance or disappointed by Spivak's performance?
I would say, for me it was 50-50 because first of all, when we see a fight like that, I don't want to make it. I'm not gonna say like, oh, Spivak had a bad night and like Gane just caught him. Like I never do that. I at least try to never do that. You know, because you can't take away from a guy that has a huge performance. And I do feel like most of the time when guys say like, oh, you know, bad, like, because I don't see any of that from Spivak, but you see some guys and they're like, oh, bad weight cut, and they try to make it seem like, you know, they try to take shine away from their opponent's win and to try to, like, lessen their loss. You know, they'll try to say, like, oh, it wasn't me in there. You know what I mean? That type of thing. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say, like, oh, Spivak wasn't himself. Like, Gane got an easy, you know, easy night or something. It's like, nah. Like, you know, I take both guys are at their best, you know. And if you have a bad night, that's on you. But you can't take that away from, you know, the guy that beat you. You can't say, like, oh, you didn't get me at my best. Like, you know, you can't do that. And if you want to do that, then you know, you all got a rematch and you just got to prove it. You can't just say that because either way, it's like Gane beat him up, bro. Gane beat him up pretty good and, you know, pretty dominantly. I really didn't see a point in that fight where I thought there was not a point in that fight where Spivak was in control. That's what I would say. He was never in control from the opening bell. He was never in control. And I think what happened was, I think Spivak, what I saw, and it was very noticeable. Like, I feel like you could almost have seen it with your eyes closed. I think Spivak lost all confidence, man. I think he really was banking on the wrestling, and his camp probably thought, like, okay, we saw Gane's last two fights. We saw the way, you know, Francis Ngannou, not a wrestler, grappler, was able to steer that fight his way when they fought for the title, dominated Gane on the mat, and then we saw what John Jones was able to do to him. But I think what a lot of people got confused about, and this is a big reason why, and this ties into what we're going to talk about too, because this is a big reason why I didn't have Sergey Spivak in my bets. You know, I mean, I saw some people betting Spivak. There was definitely Spivak bettors out there, but I knew to not take it because I was like, yo, we cannot judge Ciryl Gane off of losing to John Jones. Like, the recency bias of how easy John Jones made it look is not a good measuring stick for this fight. So Spivak cannot base the fight off of the way he looked versus John Jones. He is not John Jones, but also it's because it's John Jones that he looked that way. Like, Gane is not that bad on, like, his ground game is not that bad. I don't believe it's that bad. John Jones just made him look that bad. That's what actually happened. And I think Spivak shot the first two takedowns, and I think he was banking on the wrestling. He thought, oh, this guy's going to be a fish out of water. We'll take him down, and we'll just dominate him on the floor. And when I saw him have those two takedown attempts, you know, early in the fight, I saw a guy that, you know, Gane, clearly his takedown defense was there. He was prepared for it. He expected that. And I saw a guy that lost in Spivak that lost all confidence in himself once those two takedowns got stuffed. When he saw the way Gane was responding to him, and Gane pretty much fought him off, and his wrestling was pretty much nullified at that point, he's like, damn, this guy is not going to be that easy to take down. When he had this hand in front of Gane, fight was over. Like, you could easily see that Spivak was no longer in the fight. Two takedowns got stuff, fight was over. You could see it from that moment in round one.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just thought Ciryl Gane, you know, this is something that people got to understand. Me and Keith talk about this a lot if you listen to our show. You can't come in an octagon with just one plan, because most good fighters, you have to be able to adjust your game plan based on what's happening in the fight. Ciryl Gane, come on, bro. Your whole thing couldn't have been, I'm going to take him down and I'm going to dominate him on the ground. What about if you can't take him down? Then what? And it was like he had no plan B. Ciryl Gane looked a lot better in this fight. He looked super athletic in this fight. He was bouncing around, moving his feet, had his head movement going. Definitely didn't look like the same guy that fought John Jones, but I have to agree with my man Keys. There's levels to this. John Jones is one of the best MMA fighters to ever step in the octagon. And he has done that to some of the best guys that we ever seen fight, make them look pedestrian. So, yeah, you couldn't use the John Jones performance as a gauge to how good or bad of a fighter you might see Ciryl Gane, because that's how good John Jones is. But Spivak, man, I think one thing about him, though, that I did notice – I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it. Is he a one-round fighter, bro? Is he a guy that if he don't get you finished in the first round or early in the second round, that he can't go the distance, that he's not, he just becomes pedestrian in there? Michael Chandler is a guy that I equate this to, because as we all know, Michael Chandler is definitely a first-round fighter. Michael Chandler is a different dude once he has to take that break in between the first round and the second round and have to come back out. Outside of the Tony Ferguson fight, basically that was the only time he actually, I want to say, survived the second round. You know, later past the second round. But Spivak, he's still a good fighter. Gane was just a better man that day. But I think there are some things Spivak needs to work on. probably not him personally as a fighter, but his corner. You guys can't come in with one defined game plan and not be able to make adjustments throughout the fight. You will never, ever, ever beat top-notch fighters coming in with one game plan. Now, King's been a serial game one in impressive fashion. Quite sure he's going to be the number one contender. Do you see him beating John Jones or Stipe if he gets the winner of that fight? Do you see him beating either one of those, either one of them?
Well, no, I mean, definitely he's not beating John Jones. Even with that performance, I think he had, because it goes back to the measuring stick. It's like, it doesn't mean just because, like, clearly he's worked on his game. Like, he at least appears to have worked on his game. His takedown defense was very good. Like, he looked very prepared for the takedowns. He looked like he was ready to not let it go there, and he didn't let it go there, and then he won the fight in his world. You know, there really wasn't a world where Spivak was going to outstrike Cyril Gane. There's really not a world where many really, like, I'm not really sure who's outstriking him, to be honest, in the heavyweight division. I don't know the world any of these guys outstrike him, but it goes back to the measuring stick. It's like, you know, clearly he worked on his game. Does that beat John Jones? Probably not. I mean, I would definitely not think so. I almost want to say absolutely not, but Stipe, yeah, I mean, I'd give him a chance, you know what I mean? Maybe. Then again, you know, Stipe is also a really good wrestler too, so I don't know. I mean, I lean towards no for both of those. I could see Stipe beating Cyril Gane as well, but I think it really, this is a part two to that question. It doesn't hold as much weight. What the answer to that is not as important, because I just don't think they're going to go that way with it. Because I'll tell you this right now, I don't know if you saw this news, but what happened?
I don't think so either.
No, because I think what we're going to see is, first of all, they've already positioned. They're not going to do a John Jones versus Cyril Gane too, when we just saw him roll Cyril Gane like a swish of sweet and like 2 minutes, and you think that, like, he's going to do a rematch in the same year. There's no chance of that happening. Dana White, if you asked him his interest in that rematch, I feel like he'd probably say 0%. Like, there's no interest in that rematch. Cyril Gane, he needs to win a couple fights, you know what I mean, before we can even talk about that. And I want to say, probably the way that it looks, based on what John Jones has said, I don't even know if John Jones is going to be around to rematch Cyril Gane. He's talking about retiring after the Stipe fight. Neither one of them might be around after that fight. I could see a double retirement. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong. I would like to see if, you know, I'd like to see them stick around. I mean, Stipe, they're both getting up there. Regardless of the fact is they made the other Sergey in the heavyweight division, Sergey Pavlovich, is the official backup for that fight. Are you aware of that?
I did not know that, but makes sense.
So basically, they've already positioned Pavlovich as the number one contender in a way. I mean, if you consider the backup number one contender, I mean, we just saw that with Colby Covington. He was the backup for the Leon versus King Usman 3 fight. And after being the backup, he's pretty much number one contender. Somehow we still haven't seen a fight announcement, and it's kind of getting boring in the welterweight division. I'd like to see another title fight. But, yeah, we do see that. When you see a backup, usually that's the next guy. I mean, when Volkanovski was the backup for those two guys fighting Oliveira Islam, that guy. So it happens that way. They pretty much position Pavlovich. So if either one falls out, you're going to have Pavlovich versus John Jones or Pavlovich versus Stipe. So I think he's going to be the next guy right there, whoever wins that fight. And you pretty much have Pavlovich, but then you also have Tom Aspinall. So that's another thing. Tom Aspinall just won first-round knockout in the main event at UFC London back in July. So you pretty much have Pavlovich, Tom Aspinall, and Cyril Gane. And I want to say, bro, I think Cyril Gane is third in line and out of those three guys. I think he'd be third in line for the big fight.
Yeah, I'm looking at the rankings right now. They have Pavlovich and Cyril Gane as co-number ones with Stipe at three and then Tom Aspinall at four with Curtis Blaydes coming in at five. So, but I do think you get I think we got to see how it plays out with the John Jones Stipe fight. I think if John retire, if John wins and he retires, I say you get Cyril Gane. I don't think Stipe. I think Stipe probably quits too if he loses. I think if he loses, he probably retires. So if both of them walk away that night, you definitely get Gane versus Pavlovich for the vacant heavyweight title. But, damn, I kind of want Aspinall in the mix a little bit. I wouldn't – you don't see Never does this, Keys, but I never understand why. Why wouldn't you do a four-man tournament? Two fights, four guys to determine who's going to be the all-out champion. You got one versus four, two versus three. Basically, you would have probably Cyril Gane at number one going against Curtis Blaydes, and then Sergey Pavlovich going against Tom Aspinall, which would be the third seed as of right now. Man, that's just so much better, bro. I just don't understand why they don't do it that way. But on with you, I think Stipe, I think Jones, you know, I know Dana White would probably, he would definitely go against the grain on having Gane jump in there with Jones again. So Gane would definitely have to probably win about at least two fights. So we'll see what happens, man. In the co-main event, man, me and you were leaning later in the week towards the upset, but I'm glad, I said Rosa win. And, you know, she did put on a better fight than she did against Carla Esparza, but, you know, man, for some strange reason, she just, her and these slow starts are killing her right now. I was impressed with Amanda Fierro. I think she did what she had to do to win that fight. And I was disappointed in Rose and her slow start. What's your breakdown to that, bro?
So I'm going to say this. So this is out the gate. What is going on with that? I don't know. All right, so my bad. Out the gate, I think the third round was Rose's best round. I think that was her best round. She was, and really, I don't want to say it because I'm going to sound like a Nate Diaz fan if I say, like, oh, if she had two more rounds, she would have won. I don't want to say it because that's like a really bozo take to me. I really don't like that mentality because it's like, well, they didn't win. And you can't just say, like, oh, well, if the sky wasn't blue.
But sometimes it's true.
What happened?
But sometimes it's true.
So what I'm going to say is that, well, because where I get to with that is just people make all the excuses in the world for Nate Diaz, and I just can't stand it. But that's a different conversation. What I'm saying is that Rose Namajunas, I think round three was her strongest round, and I would lean to say that she won that round. I want to say she won that round. I think she was turning the fight over to the momentum was shifting towards her. I feel like she probably had the momentum. There was that weird cut on Fierro's head. I don't know what happened. I mean, yeah, I think they headbutted. Did they have a headbutt or something like that? And there was a lot of bleeding from Fierro's head.
I thought that was from a strike or an elbow.
Oh, yeah, so something happened. I don't know if they bashed heads or what it was, but she got hit with some kind of shot, and she was bleeding pretty bad from her head. I don't know what. So so I would say that to say this. I think the blood coming from Fierro's head, I think she was getting disoriented from that. She looked disoriented to me. She looked a lot less sharp from the moment that bleeding started. She looked, you know, within the next couple of minutes of action, she looked a lot more. She didn't look as zoned in. She didn't look like as sharp to me. You know what I mean? She looked kind of loose out there, a little bit like unaware. You know what I mean? I want to say she looked like her awareness wasn't where it was before the cut, before the shot. And so I think Rose, strongest round three. Round two, I think, was debatable. And round one, I definitely gave to Fiorot. So I think round one, Fiorot all day. That was the most dominant round of the fight. Fiorot was piecing Rose up. I don't know what Jamahal Hill was talking about. And Jamahal Hill, you my guy. I'm not giving feedback, right? Is my mic cutting too? Because I got my AC on.
No, bro, you good.
Yeah, I don't know what Jamahal Hill, but I don't know what you were talking about. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, bro.
Jamahal Hill, you're my guy, bro, but I don't know what you were talking about. He was tweeting that Rose won every round. I'm like, bro, I mean, you sound like a big fan, bro. I know you're a fighter, too. I do give the lean to fighters. I give the lean of the eye test to people that have been in there. So, okay, Jamahal Hill's take can be above mine. That's okay. I can submit to that. But I just don't know what he was talking about, saying that Rose, you know, dominated the fight and won every round. I don't really know where he was pulling that from, because that's not what happened. I mean, Fiorot clearly won round one. Rose looked absent in round one. I thought that was a very clear 10-9. There was no debate. Round two, I thought was close. It's a tough call. I want to say I leaned Fiorot in round two, though. And round three was Rose's round, I thought. So I could see why it was a debatable. But I think, and this observation I made, of course, that fight had betting implication. I had Fiorot in one of my plays, Fiorot to win in one of my plays and one of my parlays. And this observation I made during the fight, I was saying that once I saw the way she looked in round one and I was watching round two, I was with a couple of my guys watching round two, I was like, yo, I think what we might be seeing here is, I was like, Rose has been fighting mostly five-round fights for the last couple of years. You know, for the last 6 years, realistically, the last 6 years, because she fought Joanna, five-round fight. I mean, they didn't fight for five rounds, obviously, but it was a five-round fight. She's been training at a five-round pace. You know, I mean, she's been training for five-round fights more or less for the entirety of the last 6 years. You know what I'm saying? So 2017 to now, mainly been title fights. So she's had that time in the beginning to get herself going, like you were talking about. She was able to take, you know, the first round and figure things out, or the first two rounds and figure things out. And then in round three, she could say, all right, three, four, five, here's where I can lock in at. I could take three, four, five and win the fight. You know what I mean? And I think in this fight, it was a three-round fight. And I think, you know, that mentality, I think she could still be in that mindset. You know what I mean? Fiorot is somebody who has been fighting three-round fights. Fiorot, I don't even know, has had a five-round fight. I don't know that she has had a five-round fight, a five-round contest in the UFC. So she's been training three-round fights, so she knows she's starting early. Rose has been able to take a round off or two rounds off and then get into it three, four, five or in the championship round. You know what I mean? She knew she could take Wiley down rounds, you know, late round two, early round three, and let me take Zhang Wiley down and finish the fight with dominant wrestling. And that's what she did in the rematch with Zhang Wiley. You know what I mean? She said, I don't want to strike. She went to wrestle. So, and obviously it worked. So basically, I would ask, do you agree with that? Do you think that Rose training at the five-round, for the five-round cardio and taking the five-round fights could have affected her mentality going into a three-round fight?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I didn't think about it till you hit me up on the we was chatting about it on the group chat, because that does play into a person's strategy. But at the same time, Rose isn't a rookie. It's like, you know, this is a 3-round fight. You can't take 2 rounds off and you know, think that you that you're gonna win the third, that you're gonna knock the person out or submit them in the third round, when you haven't shown anything in the first two rounds that you could get him up out of there. So, but like you said, man, she been fighting five-round fights basically since November of 2017. Basically, that's how long she been training for five-round fights, since November of 2017. But not to take anything from Manny Fiorito. I got to correct myself. That cut was from a headbutt between the two ladies that caused that cut on her forehead. I thought it was a punch or elbow, but it was a headbutt, and I remember them replaying it now. But, you know, Fiorito, man, she looked good. I thought it's some things that she got to tighten up in her game as far as her striking is concerned. I thought she threw a lot of wide punches that gave Rose the third round. So, but she could tighten that stuff up, bro. But she's very, very good. Very, very good. And I'm looking at the rankings, and I know she said she won a title shot. Keys for selfish reasons. Only for selfish reasons only. We have Blanchfield at number two and Fiorito at number three. I would love to see that fight, bro. What should you think Fiorito should do next, bro?
I would like to see Fiorito versus Aaron Blanchfield, and the winner of that will fight who's the champion? Alexa Grasso?
Yeah, Alexa Grasso.
I was about to say, I lose track of these divisions now. I don't know who's the champ. Especially Rose just moved up to flyweight, too. It got me all confused because usually Rose is at strawweight. So I don't know who the champ is anymore. But, yeah, I would like to see that one. I like Fiorito versus Aaron Blanchfield for the number one contender. You know what I mean? Winner of that should fight the winner of Alexa Grasso versus Valentina Shevchenko rematch, which is going down next Saturday, which I am looking forward to.
Yeah, man. I want to see Blanchfield and Fiorito too, man. I think that would be a banger of a fight. You would definitely have a no-complaint number one contender with both ladies going at it at the 2 and 3 spot. Both of them has basically shot up the rankings in the last 2 years. I don't know. Can we say that's because the depth in the division is lacking, or those girls are that good? So I would love to see them two go at it, man. But look, man, we got to get into it, bro. We got about 30 minutes to talk about UFC 293 and a little bit of gambling, man. UFC 293 is this weekend, with the main event being our boy Israel Adesanya taking on Sean Strickland. Israel came out today, and this is why I think he's a star, Keys. Me and you always say he's a star. He's been a star since even before he had the belt. They asked him about the beef between him and Sean Strickland, and Adesanya says, hey, I really don't have beef with Strickland. The beef is manufactured. We have to sell fights, and sometimes somebody can make it easy for you to manufacture beef against them. I was like, damn. You know, you could have said that after the fight. You ain't have to let the people behind the curtain. But, you know, man, that's the kind of guy Israel is, man. But let me look at the card real quick, and I'm going to run it down to you. I don't know whether or not you got it pulled up. But in the main event, we got Adesanya versus Strickland, like I just said. In the co-main event, we have Tua Tagovailoa versus Alexander Volkov, which I think is a rematch. I think we had like an accidental eye poke or something happen in this fight that caused it to be a no contest. Then we got Manel Cape. Actually, this card is kind of whack, man. Got Manel Cape versus Felipe Dos Santos. Justin Toffel versus Austin Lane. Tyson Pedro is on this card. Carlos Olberg is on this card. Jamie Malarkey, I don't know who that is. Some dude named Blood Diamond is up here. Shane Young is up here. I think I know who that is. But, man, this card is very unimpressive to be a pay-per-view, bro. Very unimpressive. What's your thought so far?
I'll say this. It's definitely – I get what you're saying. It definitely lacks style power. I mean, Adesanya's pretty much carrying the card in his back. I will say that the names – there are good – there are a lot of – especially now where, like, I say I'm studying all week and, like, I'm putting, you know, plays together for sports – for betting. I'm starting to understand more about, like, what talent there is on the card, you know what I mean? And actually, like, knowing what I'm going into a bit more. So, but even without that, I mean, Carlos Olberg is a city kickboxing guy. You got a few city kickboxing guys up there, Adesanya's friend. Carlos Olberg is a beast, bro. This guy, I'm looking forward to seeing him. He's a city kickboxing guy. Definitely expect a W from him. Definitely a good bet for my betting people out there. Definitely a good bet. Definitely a good parlay piece. Also, Blood Diamond is another city kickboxing guy. He came from actual kickboxing, though, and just started MMA. I think he's only, like, 2-3 or 3-2 in MMA. And I think he's – I want to say he's, like, 0-2 in the UFC. And he's an example of a guy that hasn't looked good transitioning to MMA. And a lot of these guys think that they can just jump over from another sport. They're like, oh, it's kickboxing. I can go do MMA just because Adesanya did it, just because Alex Tejeda's doing it. Does not mean that every kickboxer has had success doing it. We've seen guys come over and it just doesn't work. You know, we saw – I'm trying to think of the guy we used to talk about. His name will come to me at some point, but he was a guy – he was another glory kickboxer who was supposed to be one of the best kickboxers. When he came to the UFC, I don't even know if he got a win in the UFC, and I'm pretty sure he got cut shortly after that. So you see it happen. It's not that easy to transition MMA. These guys think they can, and then when they get taken down, they try to deal with the grappling. They can't become the full package, and that's the example of what we see with Blood Diamond here. He's a guy that just is struggling with developing all the other skills and really becoming a mixed martial artist. You know, he's still looking like a kickboxer out there, you know what I mean? And you can't just be a kickboxer in the UFC. But yeah, so you got some guys. I mean, obviously Jamie Malarkey, and who's he fighting? He's fighting John McDessie. He's fighting McDessie. So yeah, that should be a good fight. But McDessie, 38 years of age. I mean, he's nearing the end of his career. I would say Malarkey's only like 20. I think Jamie Malarkey's 29. So you got a pretty big age gap in that fight, which matters a lot more, especially now. You know, I'm doing the digging. It does play a huge factor in these fights. But yeah, the card definitely lacks star power. Adesanya is carrying the card in his back, and I know one thing: the press conference tomorrow, Adesanya versus Sean Strickland, on that stage. You know, they're gonna have the whole main card up on the stage, but I just expect. I mean, we remember what happened last July, when Adesanya and Sean Strickland were on the same stage, but they weren't fighting each other. Strickland was fighting Alex Tejeda, where he would go on to get KO'd in the first round. And Adesanya was about to fight Jared Cannonier. And actually, point of emphasis, did you know Jared Cannonier is also the official backup for this fight? Did you know that?
Yes, he is. It's on the ESPN MMA page. I saw that. I was like, wow, Cannonier is the backup. That's kind of weird.
I like that. And he's fought both these guys. Did he beat Strickland? Yeah. I don't remember. I know he fought. Did he beat Strickland or did he lose?
I'm looking it up right now.
I mean, we know he lost to Adesanya. And then I know he fought Sean Strickland, I want to say, December 2022. And I don't think I don't remember if I saw that fight. I might have been away or I was doing something.
Cannonier, he lost. Strickland lost to Cannonier.
All right, so you have that. I think that we saw the back and forth between Adesanya and Strickland last July. I think this is about to be fight work. This thing tomorrow, you're going to see the two of them going at it a lot. And Strickland is – we need him at more press conferences, bro. That's – in my opinion, that's the energy we need at these press conferences. We need more guys that have a bit more personality, that want to, you know, have an exchange, have a back and forth like that, and just be competitive, you know what I mean? Because you don't really see that much competitive talk. You know, you don't even see any, like, I know I can beat you type talk. You just see, you know, and it is what it is. The event's light, though. It's pretty light, but I am excited. I mean, of course, I'm definitely excited.
Well, Ben, that you brought it up, we got a little bit of time. Which fighter are you definitely going to have your eyes on this weekend? You there, bro?
Oh, bad. Oh, my bad. I didn't know. I had my mic muted. I didn't see that. So, yeah, Carlos Hellberg and Manel Cape. I'd say Carlos Hellberg is, like, the one for the main card I'm really looking forward to seeing. And as far as the prelims, let me pull this up. 2 seconds. By the way, Nasrat is fighting one of the guys from Team McGregor on this past tough season. He's basically fighting an amateur MMA fighter. Nasrat is like a -450 favorite, which he should be because he's fighting one of Conor McGregor's guys that, you know, they just got swept on. Yeah, well, they didn't get swept. They won one round, but they almost got swept on the Ultimate Fighter. So Nasrat's basically fighting an amateur guy. So that's pretty crazy. Let me see this. Oh, I'm in the hold up rankings. Hold up, 2 seconds. Where are we? Okay. Yeah, so I definitely looking at – damn, Oberg's not even on the main card? That's crazy. Okay,
yeah,
so I thought he was on the main card. Yeah, that's crazy. So I don't know how – yeah, I guess to me he's just a bigger name than these guys. I guess just from my own viewing, Tai Tuivasa is up there. But, yeah, definitely – I guess prelims, definitely watching Oberg. There's also been a lot of talk about this Chepe Mariscal that's fighting this Jack Jenkins versus Chepe Mariscal fight. There's been a lot of talk about both of these guys over the week so far. You know, a lot of talk about both those guys, so that's an interesting fight. So I'm gonna say Jack Jenkins versus Chepe Mariscal will be my overall fight to watch, and then my fighter to watch is gonna be Carlos Hellberg in the fight right after it in the prelim main event.
Yeah, man, I think one guy that I like seeing fight is Tyson Pedro. I like to see that guy fight. So I'm going to definitely have my eye on this guy, Tyson Pedro. He don't have, like, a sparkling record. You know, he's 9-4. He's going against Anton Tokarczuk, and he's 8-2. Basically, both of them, this is basically a pick-em fight. Tyson Pedro is -105, and Anton is -115. So I'm definitely going to have my eye on this fight. It's leading off the main card. Tyson, he has to do something, Keys. This guy is in his last five fights, 1, 2, 3, 4. In his last five fights, he got 3 losses and 2 wins. In his last 7 fights, he got 4 losses and 3 wins. So, you know, he definitely got to come out and do something in this fight. And the guy can fight because he got wins against Khalil Roundtree, wins against Paul Craig. But then you have losses against Shogun Hua and Ovince St. Preux. It's like, hey, bro, what you going to do? So I'm definitely looking out for Tyson Pedro, man. I want to see what he do in this fight. Whether or not he come out and be the guy that the UFC think he gonna be, or is he just a guy that just doesn't step up to the challenge? Let me see. All right, Ben, we were talking about betting before we make our predictions. I guess we're only gonna do the co-main and the main event because. I mean, I guess we could do all of them, but only the co-main and the main event are, like, fights that, you know, So being that, you know, me and you, all right, let me get the people the backstory real quick of why me and Keys are talking about gambling. My man Keys hit me up. He told me that he had won, I want to say, all five of his fights or all six of his fights. And I had asked him, I was like, did you go with the favorites? And he told me, yeah. And I was like, well, if you won the favorites, you're supposed to win. So in Keys' response, I can tell you he had an attitude. He was like, hey, bro, you downplaying my winnings? And I was like, nah, but if you betting on the favorites, you're supposed to win. And then I was like, I don't know about gambling. So, you know, help me to the game. So, you know, he started texting me. And I'm like, look, we'll just wait the Wednesday, and you just let me, and you just school me up a little bit on Wednesday. So, Keys, I wasn't slighting you, bro. I just don't know about gambling that much. You know, I might play poker here or there. You know, I do DraftKings, but that's based on me drafting my own team, going against other people that draft their own team. But break it down to me, man, as far as, like, your process, how you go about, you know, sports betting.
So, and this is the thing is that, you know, to preface that, I just, and this goes across the board. I mean, I've just had a lot of just whack energy. You know what I mean? Like, that response for me was my, like, that is due to just dealing with a lot of just weirdo shit, just dealing with a lot of whack energy from, you know, when I was doing stocks, when I was more into the stock market for that period of time, 2020, 2021, 2022, when I was really in stocks, I, you know, I would have people say to me, I would, you know, tell, you know, people like, oh, you know, I'm doing really good with the stock. I'm making some money over here, you know. And then they say, and their first response would be, oh, well, you know, you're going to get taxed on that, right? And I'm like, what? Like, and here I am, like, and I'm like, yo, here I am telling people that I really fuck with about the fact that I'm doing well with something that I'm studying, like, it's working out for me. Like, I was studying stocks during that time. And then the money started making sense. It started working out for me because I was putting in the work. I was doing the due diligence. And then now here it is. I tell somebody that I really fuck with that, oh, I'm doing, you know, I'm making a bunch of money on the stock, and I'm telling them because I'm excited. Like, that's what you do when you share your excitement. Yeah. If it's your wife or your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your boy, you know what I mean? Your girlfriend who is your best friend, you're going to tell people what you're excited about, and you think that's a safe space to do that. But I would get a lot of pushback from people saying, oh, well, you know, you're going to get taxed on that, right? And all sorts of just weirdo shit to say. Like, that's a weird-ass thing to say. And it's like, why is that the first response? You know what I mean? Why is that the first thought you have? Why wouldn't the first thought be what it should be? Yeah. Why is that your first response? It's like you're going on the, like, you're just, like, going against, you're just, like, trying to, like, put me down about it. You know what I mean? So I just think that's whack. And then, you know, this time, but then I've also gotten pushback about the sports betting. So I've also had, you know, weird shit people say. Since I've, you know, it's a similar case as when I was in the stock game, now that I'm in the sports betting game, and same thing, I'm studying it, I'm doing the due diligence, now it's starting to turn over and it's working out for me. And then I've had people that I've told them, yo, I'm mad excited, I'm winning on this play, making money on this play, I just killed this parlay, I just swept, whatever happened. And this is not, I'm not talking about you, I'm saying before that, I've had people say to me, you know, oh, well, you know, like how much did you risk, or oh, you know, the taxes on sports betting is they kill you on they tax it more. You know what I mean? And how much did you have to risk to make that much? And then I've had people just straight up say to me, like, I've told people, like, yo, I've told people I made $800, right? I tell people I made $800, and they say, "Oh well, how much did you have to bet to make that?" I'd say, "I bet, you know, $500 or so. I made back $1,300, so I made $800 profit." And they say to me, "Wow, you had to bet that much to make that you had to bet that much money to get that? I'm like, what? I'm like, what are you, bro? I'm telling you, I just made $800 profit. What are you talking about? You're saying to me, oh, you had to risk that much to make that much? I wouldn't have. It's like, what? Like, why is that? I'm over here pumped that I put up $500 and I made back over $1,300. That was an $836 day. And just for the people, just for you, Lee, just for the understanding, that was UFC London when Tom Aspinall got that first round knockout that we were talking about earlier. That was that card that I did that. That was that card. So I had, I think, two different parlays that time, or maybe three different parlays, and I split the money up. But all together, that was how much I bet, and then that was the winning, which I think that was a great day, bro. So I worked that day. That was like a $1,000 day for me. You know what I'm saying? And for people to say, oh, you know, that's all you made betting that much, and I'm like, wow, like that's a pretty whack, you know, response to give. Like, again, same thing as the stocks. Like, oh, you're gonna get taxed on that, right? So basically, I've had this type of response from people where I tell them things I'm excited about, I'm winning at it, and they try to slight me. You know what I mean? I see that as trying to slight me. You know, but both of those statements is like, you know, and it's kind of like, it just sounds like jealousy to me. You know what I'm saying? It just sounds like you're just trying to, like, knock me down a peg. You know what I mean? And I don't know why you would do that if I'm your man, you know what I mean, or if we're boys, or, you know what I mean, whatever it is, or we're family, or whatever it is. You know, why are you trying to do me like that? You know what I mean? I would never respond to somebody, my boy says he's killing it. I'm going to be like, bro, you're killing it. Good shit. I would never... I'd say I'm happy for you. You know what I mean? I would never do that. So I don't know why it comes like that. But so you could see that over the time, that made me come to that kind of – I do kind of watch how people respond to what I say now because of that, and I don't really appreciate it. So when you said, oh, well, I forget what you said, but it seemed to me that you were coming at it the same way as those people. I thought that's what it was, and – What happened?
I mean, I see where you're coming from now, but then, you know, I explained why I said what I said, and then you was like, okay, bro, because I don't, you know, I always say this on the show, people that listen to the show, I don't gamble. I just don't, that's just something I don't do, and I wasn't slighting you, bro. And then I did say, I was like, yeah, you've been on a high street lately.
Yeah, I didn't know. So after that, after you point that out to me, I was like, all right, like, it's, you know, I delete my text threads a lot, so I tried to just scroll back and see what I said, but I don't have that thread. I only have, like, me and you since Saturday because I kind of clear out my text threads a lot. But so I don't know, but I'm going to take your words for it. Whatever I said is what I said, but I'll tell you that my understanding was there once you said, like, yo, I just don't really know, like, I don't really know the game. I'm not really familiar with it. Like, I was like, all right, like, I get it, you know. But it was just the initial when you said, like, did you take the favorites? Or, like, is that betting all the favorites or something? And that was the only part where I was like, what? Like, I was like, damn. Like, I thought that was, but then once you were like, nah, I just don't really know how it works, I was like, all right, like, I might have jumped out the window right there, you know. So yeah, that's where I was at.
It was all good. I mean, you know, I ain't taking it personally. You know, I was just trying to get schooled on it because I know that they put the negatives, you know, the negatives and the positives out there for a reason. What's that? The gambling line, right? The line. The betting line or something that?
Yeah, the betting lines, yeah.
Yeah, so they put that out there, you know. I know what that kind of sort of means, that, you know, if you're a minus, you're the favorite. If you're the plus, you're the underdog. But always been under the I was always under the guise that at gambling, you only win if you go with the underdog. But then you told me in the chat that we was having that you do parlays. So what you doing parlays, you actually taking a bigger risk because you were betting that, okay, I'm going to pick these five to win, and the only way you can win is if all five of them win. So it ain't like it's a one-off where it's, you know, something about anybody. Yeah. Yeah, I see. All right, well, go ahead. You can pick it up from there.
So I'll break it down like this. So the thing is this. So so I like to do parlays where it's a multi-step bet. It's a multi-piece bet. But at the and generally speaking, yeah, you have to win all the steps of your parlay. You have to sweep it to win, you know. But at the same time, I'm pretty sure all sports books allow this, but I know definitely with I'm pretty sure all sports books allow it, but I know definitely with DraftKings, you have early cash outs. So you could go up 2-0 in a five-piece parlay and cash out at 2-0. Like, that's what I did at UFC 290. I had whoever I had, and then I had a parlay where I had Drakus Duplessis to win versus Robert Whittaker, and he was my second leg. I didn't expect that one. I didn't know. I was like, all right, Whittaker's probably going to win. Let me do this other parlay and just see. That was just kind of like, all right, let me take these underdogs, see how we go. When Drakus won, I cashed out at 2-0 before the Moreno versus Pantoja fight. And in the third leg, I had Pantoja. So I would have went up 3-0, but I cashed out at 2-0 because I wasn't liking the feeling. And we saw how that was a close decision. So, and the same thing happened with UFC 292. I had a six-piece parlay. 292, I had a six-piece parlay. I went up 5-0 on the parlay. I went 5-0 on the parlay, and then the sixth leg was Aljamain Sterling to top it off. Now, when I was at 5-0, in between rounds, you can't cash out during any of the fights that you have. You can't cash out while the fight is in the cage. But you can cash out during the commercial break or during the in-between, all the way up to the walkouts of that next leg. So basically, I was up 5-0, right? You understand? I was up 5-0. And I cashed out during Sean O'Malley's walkout. I cashed out during his walkout at 5-0 because when I ever saw Sean O'Malley walking out to Lupe Fiasco's Superstar, Lupe Fiasco's song Superstar, when I heard that walkout song and I saw the way he looked, I saw the look in his eyes, bro. I felt the energy. I heard the Lupe song. I was like, yo, that song Superstar is a banger. That's a classic. I was like, yo, he's got the juice, bro. Sean O'Malley's got the juice. Even though my pick was Sterling, my bet was Sean O'Malley. My pick was Sterling and my bet was Aljamain Sterling, but I cashed it out at 5-0, basically bowed out of it. I bowed out. So you can cash out and hop out, and that next leg doesn't matter. You're out of it. So that's what I did. I cashed out 5-0, and it worked out because what happened? Sean O'Malley ended up winning, and if I stayed in, that would have been all that work, all that, you know, all those legs, 5-0 would have been worth nothing. I would have left with zero. Instead, I cashed out what I cashed out, won a couple $100, and I cashed out. So, yes, in the parlay, you can win on favorites too, even on just the money line, which is just like betting one fight. Like if you wanted to bet Israel Adesanya to beat Sean Strickland, you could just bet that straight bet Israel Adesanya to be the winner in that main event. And that would just be taking the Israel Adesanya money line. That's what they call those. It's just a money line bet. You just take the one line, and the money line is usually just to win or lose. You know, you just pick a winner, that's the money line. So you can also take it on, like, does the fight go the distance? You could bet does the fight not go the distance? For example, in that parlay that we just saw, this past weekend, I want to say, who did I have? And I just bet the fight does not go. I don't remember who I did something like that on that card. And so one of my parlay legs, so you could do like money lines, and then you could do like I call that like a money line prop. Is like, does the fight go the distance or does it not go the distance? Like, for example, at UFC 291, I had Derek Lewis's fight. I didn't bet him or Marcos Rogério de Lima who to win. I just bet, you know what I bet, bro? I bet that fight does not go the distance. That's what I bet. And that was a piece for my parlay. So now you can see that, like, so you can bet in many different ways. So, like, can you only win on the underdog, win money on the underdog? No. You can also win money on favorites. But the problem is if you bet favorites at the money line, like if you bet Tanya at the money line right now, the straight Israel Adesanya money line, I want to say, is minus 650. So that would mean that you would have to bet $650 to win back 100 on Israel Adesanya because he's such a big favorite. Now, if you bet Sean Strickland, he's a big underdog. I don't know what his underdog line is, but if you were to bet him, you know, it would be the opposite. Say Strickland's like a plus 500 underdog. That means that's how it would be plus 500 for every 100 that you bet. See what I'm saying? So it's basically flipped upside down. When you bet the favorite, there's more risk, depending on how much they are of a favorite. Like if they're only like a, you know, Dustin Poirier was like a minus, you know, 120 against Justin Gaethje. So right there, he's close enough to – that's so close to even odds. That was so close to a pick'em to where betting Dustin Poirier to win that time was more worth it because you only have to bet $120 to win back 100 for every 120. You know what I'm saying? So it's almost a double up for every time you bet it. You get what I'm saying? So Justin Gaethje was a plus 100. So that means he's exactly a double up. He's exactly a 2X play. Justin Gaethje was, for every 100, you make back 200. You know what I'm saying? You get your 100 back plus another 100. So he was exactly a 2X play. Carlos Ullberg is a minus, I want to say, 270 right now. So Ullberg is, you would have to bet $270 to win back 100 on top of that 270. So if you bet 270 on Carlos Ullberg at the money line by himself and he wins, you would win back $370. You'd win back your 270 plus 100. So with that being said, you can win money on favorites too, betting just a favorite. But I like to do parlays because it combines the odds and I can basically – It becomes a multiplier. A parlay is like an odds multiplier, pretty much, and so you can get those fights at better odds, pretty much. Because it becomes a multiplier and it creates a new odds because you're not just betting the odds on that one fight anymore. You know, if I bet Carlos Ullberg and Israel Adesanya, it's gonna calculate a new odds based on the odds of both of them winning. Some people like to get really spicy and they'll do like, you know, they'll bet it down to the round and the finish. And, you know, some people are probably going to bet like, you know, this guy wins by knockout in the third round. Like I usually don't go that specific because in this game, like it's tough to get it down to the fine detail like that. But, I like to play it low risk, you know, low risk, more conservative style. I like to be calculated, play it. You know, I look at all the possibilities, you know what I'm saying? And then I put my mind together. But, yeah, you can win money on the favorites, but generally it's a higher risk to do that because you have to bet more to win less. With underdogs, you could bet less to win more. But with parlays, you can get to plus odds with almost any fighter or at least get the odds down so you can lower your risk and make decent money even on favorites. So for me last weekend, I swept five parlays, and I don't think I had a single underdog in those parlays. But what it came down to was multiple outcomes. So, yeah, I was winning on favorites, but not every favorite has to win. You know what I mean? We see a lot of underdog wins. We just saw Justin Gaethje head kick knockout Poirier, and he was the underdog. And that happened in the second round. When's the last time Poirier got KO'd? Got KO'd was what, 2013 against McGregor or 2014 against Conor McGregor? I think it was 2013. That was the last time we saw Dustin get KO'd. That was 10 years ago. It was a decade since he'd been KO'd Sif. Even TKO'd. He hasn't even been TKO'd. But you know what I'm saying? He had not been KO'd in 10 years. So underdogs win a lot too. So it really just depends. You do the research and it's there. And do the favorites that I pick win? Maybe they don't. Maybe they do. You know, see favorites lose. You know, all the time. It really depends. But the parlay is generally a multiplier, so I can get it at different odds. So when I'm betting Adesanya at minus 650, I'm not getting him at minus 650. He's in my parlay. I might get him at plus 150. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
for the okay. overall odds, because it's coming down to what are the odds of all these outcomes. That's what it is. It's combining everything. I'm saying I'm betting on these top six fights, and I'm betting on these six outcomes. And now it gives me an odds for all six of those happening.
Okay. Because, you know, I see the parlay being riskier, but I also see it as being probably a way I would bet, because basically it's like, okay, Lee, you can pick certain ways of how you can win. So I like the parlay. I like that better than a one-up or one-off. So, yeah, man. I know. I think you put something on Twitter saying you was 34-4.
Yeah. So I'm 34-4 in my last 38 bets. So basically, like, I'll hedge my bets sometimes. Like, I'll do an opposite parlay to hedge it so I can guarantee profit. I pretty much play like an investor. Like, I come from the stock market, and now I'm doing sports betting. So I'm pretty much setting it up like somebody that was buying stocks. You know what I mean? Like somebody that was, you know what I mean, trading. Like, that's pretty much how I'm looking at it. 34-4, yes, my four losses have been Dustin Poirier. I had Poirier. He got KO'd. That shit hurt my feelings, bro. It hurt my feelings real bad. It was Poirier. I had Ignacio Bahamondes, who lost like maybe like a month ago. Ignacio, that was a big upset. He was a favorite, by the way. Also, Poirier was a favorite, by the way. Both lost.
Yep.
Who else did I lose? Poirier, I lost. He was a favorite. Bahamondes is like 6'2", lightweight. He lost. He was a favorite. And he was a big favorite. He was like a -260 favorite or something like that. It was crazy. He got beat up bad. Dude chopped the legs off him and just smoked him. Ludovic Klein. Just chopped the legs and just smoked them. Who else? Fuck, who were the other two? Oh, yeah. Then Bedoya on the Holloway card. Bedoya, I lost. He was also a favorite. I think he was like a -250 favorite or something. I had him in a parlay. Bedoya lost. He was on the Korean Zombie, Max Holloway on the card. That was my third loss. And then my fourth loss was this past week. When was it? Was it last weekend. Okay, it was this past weekend. So I swept five parlays. I had five parlays. Here's my bet. I had five parlays, and I posted this on Twitter, by the way. I posted every single bet that I had just for the sake of transparency, y'all. I posted every bet I had this past weekend. I told you the wins and losses. So I had five parlays. I swept the five parlays, and I had one money line prop, which I won on in the parlay. So I bet Volkan Ozdemir to win in one of my parlays. Or multiple parlays, whatever it was. And so I won on Volkan winning, but I lost on Volkan not winning by KO or TKO. That's what I bet. I bet the prop money the prop money line, which was Volkan Ozdemir to win by KO, TKO. And typically he would do that, but see, these are those intangibles that you can't always predict. Volkan is getting into his submission game now. We saw Volkan Ozdemir tap that dude out. He took that debut from the regional team. That dude looks like Anthony Smith from Walmart. That dude he fought. You see that dude he fought? Bogdan Dutkov, bro. That dude looks like Walmart Anthony Smith, bro. Has anybody ever seen him, Bogdan Dutkov, and Anthony Smith in the same room? I don't know. Anthony Smith wasn't at that event. I don't know how. He wasn't there. But, yeah, Volkan choked that dude out, bro. Choked him out. And... you know, that's like that. You just, how do you predict that? You don't know. Vulcan's like, yo, I don't want to throw hands. I want to choke dudes out. But now we got submission. We got BJJ Vulcan now. You know, so yeah, that was my fourth loss. And I think that I don't know if that was at plus money or it was like really close. It might have been like -120 or like something like that. It was really close to even odds. And that was my fourth loss. So I won on Volkan winning. I won on Volkan in the parlay, but I lost on the prop money line because I bet him by KO, and he won by submission.
Okay. All right, man. We done kind of went over, so give me your two. I know you're going with Adesanya. how does Izzy get it done Saturday?
So I'm thinking Adesanya in the distance. I like Adesanya to win by unanimous decision. I think I see him putting on a clinic, winning by unanimous decision. That's my personal pick. I didn't bet that. I just have him on the money line in my parlays. I want to say Israel Adesanya in the distance is actually a great betting line. Just saying, y'all, if you do feel that, if you do like that one, that there's going to be pretty good odds on that. And yeah, I like Adesanya to put on a clinic and just pretty much dominate Sean Strickland. I don't think Strickland has nearly the striking versus Israel Adesanya. I think, you know, this is going to be a show. You know what I mean? I see a show happening. I don't think it'll be a snooze. I don't think so. I think Adesanya is going to have some fun with this one. You know what I mean? Especially Sean Strickland's on short notice. I'm pretty sure he was supposed to fight Dricus du Plessis on this card. And then Dricus broke his hand or he broke his foot. I think he might have broke his foot. And he fell out of the fight with that injury. And he didn't, you know, so he's injured. And now Sean Strickland. So Strickland's on short notice. Strickland just fought Abus Magomedov, you know, not long ago. That was like a couple weeks ago. Strickland versus Abus Magomedov. Remember that fight? Strickland pretty much smashed him to pieces in that fight. You know what I mean? Strickland got his first knockout or TKO in a long time. So that was pretty crazy. But, yeah, I'm liking Israel Adesanya. I like Carlos Alberg to win. I think Alberg is going to get a KO over Dawoon Jung. I see Alberg. Again, I'm not betting him by KO, but I like him in the parlay. Great parlay piece, minus 270. Definitely a parlay piece. Justin Taffer, August Lane. Austin Lane, their last fight ended in 28 seconds by eye poke. They had a no contest eye poke, bro, 28 seconds into the contest. That was Justin Taffer versus Austin Lane. That's a one of two heavyweight fights. One of two good heavyweight fights. We're going to get tied to Gavasta and Alexander Volkov, too. I'm not really – I like Volkov to win, and I like Justin Taffer to win. I'll say that, but – as far as from a betting standpoint, I don't know if I'll be betting them that way. I'm liking just both of those fights to not go the distance. That's what I'm looking at in one of my parlays right now. I'm liking that. I think Taffer Austin Lane, you know, definitely finishes and tied to Volkov. I mean, Volkov has 24 TKOs, bro. Volkov has 24 TKOs under his belt. That's pretty crazy. Not that many guys got 24 TKOs. So, and obviously Tuivasa, we know Tuivasa likes to slug it out. We know he's either getting finished or he's finishing. So, yeah, I like that one to not go the distance either. That's at minus 330. I definitely like that one. Nasrat, I like Nasrat to dominate Landon Quinones. Landon Quinones is pretty much right off the regional scene. This guy, I mean, Nasrat has a huge experience advantage, bro. I think he's going to piece this guy out bad. And I like Manel Cape to beat Felipe Dos Santos. Felipe is another guy off the regional scene. He's 7-0 undefeated, but he's undefeated against who, though? You know what I'm saying? That's the question. And he's fighting Manel Cape. Manel Cape was a champion, you know, and I forget where he came from, but he was a champ. And now he's in the UFC, and he has a bunch of UFC experience. I think Manel Cape's going to smoke this guy. So, yeah, I just gave you a bunch of my picks right there. Who do you like in the main event?
Oh, man, I like Izzy. Third round TKO. Key special, and I like Tatu Avassa. Heavyweight fight so hard to predict, but I'm gonna go with first round for Ty. You know, they fighting two tough dudes, man. Volkov is tough and Strickland is tough, so I definitely like Justin Taffer also. I would probably stay away from the Tyson-Pedro fight. But if I was betting on this fight, I would probably go with Tyson. And that's basically it, man. But I'm definitely looking forward to saying, you know, man, I always think Izzy put on great, great fights, great performances. And let's see what he do out on the walkout. You never know what Izzy going to do, man. He's just that guy right now. So, yeah, I got him winning with the key special. was at the
cover. Man, I love that, man. My key special, bro. Let's go. Third round TKO. Bro. I could see it, bro. I could see Strickland getting KO'd in this fight. I could, for sure, because he's very – he doesn't have that many, like, things that he does really well. I mean, he like – I don't know why he tried to kick to stand in front of Alex Pereira. I mean, I don't really expect that he's gonna like charge Izzy down either. I don't really know what he's gonna do. I don't really know what's gonna happen. I'm kind of baffled with that fight. I'm not really sure what to expect, but I could see. I definitely think Adesanya could KO Sean Strickland, especially with the confidence coming off Alex Pereira, him KOing him in the second round of their rematch. You know, I think Adesanya's confidence is going to be high, bro. I could see another KO coming. I could definitely get down with that. So,
yeah, man.
On that note, bro.
I think he's going to make it look easy Saturday, man. I think Sean's going to be game, but once Izzy figures him out, he's going to get him up out of there. But on that note, man, we covered a lot tonight. Everybody have a great weekend. Take care of you. Take care of yourselves. Any last words, Keith?
Nah, I feel like I just had a whole bunch of extra worries, brought us, you know, overtime quite a bit. So, nah, I'm going to just leave it at that. I'm good, bro. I'm chilling. You know what I mean? You close it out. Everybody just, life is short. Love each other. That's what I'm going to leave it at. And thank y'all to anybody who listens. This floor is yours, bro.
Nah, man, you got to hit them with the mental health part.
What I say?
When you hit them with the, you got to take care of your mental health and,
you're talking about, yeah, so I was saying, you know, life is short, love each other, and take care of your mental health, because, you know, I'm a guy that struggles with mental health every day, you know what I mean? Our boy Evan does as well, and shout out to Evan, and I struggle with mental health every day, but, you know, I know that, you know, as you work on it and you stay on it, you know, I've seen it myself. Other areas of your life get better as the more you work on your mental health. So if you can get – because, you know, one thing they say is, you know, the world can be a projection of what's inside your mind. You know what I mean? So it's if your mental health is not good, that's going to affect you at your job. That's going to affect you in your relationship. It's going to affect you in your marriage. It's going to affect you in your friendships. You know what I mean? It's gonna affect you in dating. It's gonna affect you in anything. It's gonna affect you, you know, trying to, you know, learn a new skill. It might throw you off. You might lack motivation. So, in all of those things can actually reverse it. Can actually help your mental health if you dive into those things. You know what I mean, so if you work on both, work on the mental health, but also don't isolate yourself and cut yourself off from any of those opportunities, any good things that come, you know what I mean? Accept all the good things while working on your mental health, then you can water all those plants, you know what I mean? You can water all those plants while you're watering yourself. You know what I mean? If you get your garden nice and flourishing, then you can water all these other gardens and get those flourishing too, and they will start to get better as you do that. So work on your mental health and other areas, and then as you do, other areas of your life will improve as well, you know what I mean? Because if your mental health is bad, you know, it's gonna be hard for you. You know what I mean? It'll be hard. So definitely mental health, 1,000%. Did I cover it?
Yeah, you covered it. All right, man, everybody, hey, be good, take care of yourself. As always, we're always in the show with a peace.